We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I just read this comment. Brian must have had stern words for Sean about starting a show on time. should we say why we're a couple minutes late today?
Somebody broke into the studio.
Yes, that's right.
And got me going about high school football. That's what happened.
That's right. That's right. Somebody at the top of the food chain. Let's just leave it at that. But we're off and rolling. We're ready to go. We've got matching hats and everything. And by the way, I heard there was talk last week. Somebody was talking about the greatest quarterback ever. So I decided I'd put on the jersey of the greatest quarterback ever, Roger Staubach, my man, who won a Heisman Trophy at Navy, went and served in the Navy for a few years, you know, during the Vietnam War, and then he comes back and wins two Super Bowls and goes to five total in the 70s with the Cowboys. So I've got the jersey of the greatest quarterback ever.
Look at you.
On me right now.
Look at you. I'm impressed. Right. I didn't realize we were supposed to wear, like, throwback jerseys and stuff. I would have gotten all over that.
And no, it is not a John Elway jersey. But I hope you had a great weekend. Everybody who's with us right now, the chat is alive and rolling right now on YouTube. I spent my weekend in Cleveland, and yes, I did have a good time in Cleveland. Went to a Red Sox-Guardians game Saturday night. That was a good time. My son resides over there. There were, you know, a couple parts of town I was like, wow, really? But he's coaching.
Is that your first time in Cleveland?
No, I've been there.
Oh, okay.
A couple times,
okay.
But saw different parts of Cleveland that I hadn't seen before.
Okay.
Let's just put it that way. But
okay,
he's my son is also, this is his first year coaching. He's coaching a little league team, 7 through 9 year olds. It's coach's pitch and all that stuff. And it reminded me, you know, of when I did coach's pitch, you know, when he was doing it, but they also changed it to machine pitch. And you know, he did a pretty good job throwing consistent strikes. You know, I always used to give him a hard time. It's like, just wait until you're coaching, you know. Because I used to get a hard time, you know, with like, you know, throwing batting practice and stuff like that. Just wait till you have to do it and you've got to throw strikes consistently. It's not as easy
exactly
as it looks.
He doesn't have a son that's that age. So what is he doing coaching little league little kids?
He's testing the waters to see kind of what he would think about coaching, you know.
Interesting.
He's thinking about, you know, doing some more of that maybe eventually. He's an engineer by trade, and
right,
of course you see him here Wednesdays with me as well on this show. You know, he's got an extensive sports background, and
probably right,
because of me and his own playing days and all that stuff as well. But yeah, so he was kind of giving it a shot this year to see what he thinks. These are like,
oh dude,
really, really,
yes,
you know, and like even for that age group, you know, because it's like city rec league and stuff like that. So it's very entry level.
Let's just
put it that way.
But if he's dipping his toe into those little kids, then he's really got to love it.
But I'll say this. His kids hit the ball.
Okay.
I'll say that. His kids hit the ball. They were all knocking the ball. You know, they were all making pretty good contact.
Do they go the right way?
It's one of these things where you get like, because it's coach's pitch, they give them 7 pitches, you know,
regardless.
And if you don't, you know,
pressure's on the coach.
Just about all of his kids, you know, we're putting it in play. The other team, not as much. So that's, you know, if I'm going by that alone, I was fairly impressed with
this. All right. It's not easy to impress Sean Steyers. I know this from personal experience. So
that's right.
You got that.
And Jesse knows that as well.
So. well, I wish he was closer because I'd hire him as a coach in a hot second. So
that's right. That's right. That's right. Maybe he's glad that he's not. I don't know.
That's probably fair.
We've got a lot we're going to jam into this show. We, you know, we've got all the stuff with the running backs. We got Link Jarrett announced as head coach down at Florida State today. So we're going to talk about both those things. We've got rapid fire, you know, with extra topics coming up a little bit later. I was originally going to get us a guest today, and I figured, you know what, we've got enough to talk about. It's Vince and I. It's like, you know, we've got plenty. We've got comments again, you know, from listeners, viewers, and all that. Hold it. Brian says I'm fired. Well, I guess I've just got to wrap up the show, and that's going to be it for today. He's still sore about that Elway stuff, I guess. But
well, you know, that's not surprising.
But hey, don't forget, you can subscribe to the show on YouTube, as well as the other audio platforms, you know, whether it's Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast. Throw us a rating, subscribe to the podcast, helps us out quite a bit. Glad to have you along with us today. We're only a week away from the 4th of July, Vince.
Crazy.
I didn't really realize.
It creeps up on you. And the only reason I know that it's coming up is because next week is moratorium. And you can't have, in high school, you can't have contact with your coaches. So it's like the 1 week off, which means my kid's going to be around a lot more often than necessary. So I'm sending him off to a camp so he can go away for a while. But yeah, that's the only reason I realized it was the 4th of July. I was like, oh my gosh, next week's moratorium. Like that literally means summer's halfway over. That's what it means. And that's the worst part of it.
For you, that's got to be a bummer.
That is
that's
the
right.
worst
you and all
part
the other
of it.
Teachers.
Yes.
Yeah. But we've got 68 days until Notre Dame and Ohio State, which really to me, I don't know about you. It doesn't seem like that much either right now.
No.
68 days away.
No, that's going to be here before you know it. And we're going to be doing, you know, team previews and position previews and all that stuff rolling in here. And because fall camp starts in August, which is a little over a month away. It's usually like kind of that first week of August neighborhood, depending on how they want to do things. It usually backtracks from the first game, but that's going to be here real quick. And you and I are going to be watching some fall practice. That's what's going to happen.
That's very true, too. Of course, that leads us into today's topic, because 68 days is not long, especially when you consider what just happened here just a few days ago with the horrible news of Jadarian Price and the Achilles rupture and the surgery. And
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He's, you know, likely out a good chunk of the season. Definitely out for, you know, most of it. If he's lucky, maybe he's back for something at the end.
I wouldn't count on
game
it.
Or something like, no, not at all.
I wouldn't count on it. Yeah.
At all. But, you know, we know what a loss this is because he had a great spring.
Yeah.
We expected to see a lot of him this season. But now you've got both Jadarian Price and Logan Diggs out, you know, because Diggs has the labrum, the shoulder labrum as well. He, in all likelihood, will be back at some point, you know, once the season starts. But they're not going to start, you know, the season with Logan Diggs. They're going to start this season, or at least training camp anyway, with three healthy scholarship running backs. Of course, you've got Chris Tyree, you've got Audric Estime, and then you've got the freshman, Jabron Payne. And, you know, we were all, you know, I don't know all, but, you know, there were some people, I think, who were like, hey, you know, you're signing Jabron Payne, you know, where does he fit in and all this kind of stuff. Pretty good thing they went out and signed Jabron Payne, as it turns out, huh?
Absolutely. No, no question about it. I think when we were doing some of the position, not previews, because it was like post-spring, we were talking about each position, right? And we were talking about the running back position. It was one of the deepest, most talented positions on the team. Yeah. And it was one of the ones that we were most excited about, with five guys who all could potentially play a role, you know, and I was really excited about this running back group. There's no question about it. And I think the biggest question mark was who's going to be, you know, the quote unquote lead back, you know, what is it going to look like? What's the rotation going to be like? All of these different things. But those were great questions to have. Like, I had no problem with those questions because whoever you plug in to those various different spots, I think it was going to be successful, right? You had five guys for what Coach McCullough calls eight starting positions in the backfield, right? He's broken it down to eight different jobs,
basically, right?
And, you know, one guy could take more than one, et cetera, but I think there was going to be a spot for all five of those guys in some form.
And that's kind of what he talked about. It's like, I've got eight jobs. I can mix and match and do all these different things.
That was exciting. Like, I was really excited about that. And now you've gone from five down to three. That's a definite issue. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an issue, you know, one, going through training camp, because it is a contact sport, obviously. How they manage training camp, I think, becomes a different issue with just three scholarship guys. I mean, now, obviously, you know, you have some of your walk-ons, a guy like Chase Ketter. You've got Sam Asaf, you know, out there as well. You know, so like
– Justin Fisher.
Yeah, that's true. Justin Fisher, the former Mishawaka quarterback. He was a triple option guy. And, you know we've seen him the last couple of years. That guy's put together. He's built like a running back. So, yeah, you know, like – So getting through training camp, doing some different things, you know, you've got some bodies who can help you out situationally, but you still have to navigate training camp one and make sure that everybody gets through healthy. That's always the first goal. And I mean, you know, not that look at Maris Leofau last year. It very unfortunately did not go well for him. There's always going to be some guys dinged up. And when you're talking about the running back position, you know, you're talking about a guy who's going to, you know, a position where guys are going to be getting contact all the time.
Lots
of
it.
And even just cutting and just, you know, so all those different things that you definitely don't want, you know, guys to quote unquote play safe, I guess, because, you know, then you get into, well, you're playing half speed, whatever. I think you risk injuries even more. But there are questions just getting through camp. Sure. I think, with three scholarship running backs, don't you?
Well, and I think that that's where you have to give some of these walk-ons and some of these other guys opportunities for some of those carries. I mean, as a running back, you don't need a ton of carries to get ready for the season. You need the mental side of it, obviously. You need to know your tracks. You need, you know, there's certain things, obviously, that you need to know. But there's no reason to get banged up during training camp. There's just no reason for it. And, you know, when you're doing 11-on-11, you can get a couple of carries here and there, and that's fine. But you don't have to really get the carries high for these guys in order for them to be effective once the season starts. I don't see that at all. Now, that's where, and I don't want to say that they're expendable, but that's where some of those walk-ons come into play. You know, give them some of those carries when you're working on half line and you're doing some of these different things where you need a guy to run the ball. That's where those guys are very, very handy to have around. And that's why you have them around, frankly. And you're not going to be moving them over to the scout team until the season starts or until the week before the season starts. And so during fall camp, those are the guys that should be getting a lot of those carries. I don't Those guys, the other guys, the scholarship guys, are D1 running backs. They know how it feels to carry the ball. So, you know, they'll be fine as long as they understand the offense and you work the mesh. You can work the mesh with the quarterback without getting hit. You can do that all day long without getting hit. So they'll get that done. They'll get their track done. They'll work on working behind the offensive line, things of that nature. But there are ways to – it's like having a pitcher during the preseason, right? You clock his pitches. Right? You're going to clock their carries just like you're going to clock the throws on a quarterback. All that stuff is going to be figured out. I think you can do it in a very intelligent way, so that part doesn't necessarily concern me unless they're like, oh, we got to have those guys carry it every time, which I don't see that being the case. I think they're going to be smart about it. So I'm not as worried about it. But there's a lot of carries to be had in the preseason, and so you have to be careful.
Yep, that is very true. And Craig Sebring in our YouTube chat was reading my mind, because this is the question I was about to broach, because now you've got three scholarship running backs on the roster. Should Notre Dame consider a grad transfer if they can still find one? I'll just say, because of a lot of the things that you just outlined and that we outlined, my answer is yes, because as of right now, okay, you're expecting to get Logan Diggs back at some point once the season starts, but that is still not a guarantee. And as physical and as demanding as the running back position is, you just don't know. You know, I mean, look at the 2015 season when Malik Zaire went down, DeShone Kizer becomes the quarterback. Well, that was the most probably high profile of the injuries that year, but you know, like, remember CJ Procise got a chance because of another, you know, like there was a long list. It was like 9-10 different guys who went down to season ending injuries. It was all next man in. You just don't know. And I just feel like if you can find a grad transfer at this point, one, that's going to be hard because you're sitting here at the end of June, but if you can find a grad transfer running back who is willing to come in, you know, not really necessarily know what his role is going to be, not have anything promised, but know that you've only got three scholarship running backs. I feel like it makes a lot of sense as an insurance policy if you can go out and find someone at this point in the game.
I have a couple of issues with that. Number one, is it too late to bring in a grad transfer? I don't know the rules. And so that would be my first. I thought that there was a date in the spring where you had to figure out transfers and all that stuff. And allowed to be eligible for this season. I don't know. I'm kind of throwing that out there into the ether. I'm not 100% sure on that. Number two, and Sean Kane actually brought this up. Notre Dame is already over the scholarship limit. I don't know if they have scholarships to give out to transfer guys. And if they're going to give one out, they're going to have to take one away from somebody. And so that is an issue that I think that they would have to explore. Sure. And I wouldn't really like that, to be honest with you. They've already kind of figured out who's going to be who, and to strip somebody of a scholarship, I think that
and
would be
pretty
focused.
And you do have to be back to 85 this year because of the COVID exemptions kind of go away, you know, like, and all that different kind of stuff. So you do. No.
Yeah,
that,
and I to me, I'm comfortable with three and then the walk-ons.
And I can see the other side of it as well. You know, and yeah, like, because, well, here, I'll just go ahead and throw this up right here. I don't know what that username is. Seems hard to convince a legit running back to come here to be the third, fourth string. I'm sure we could get a body, but would that body help the team outside of practice? And I'm not talking about somebody who is quote unquote legit, because they would come in sort of with the understanding that you are going to be coming into training camp the fourth string running back. You know, again, no promises, not like you're expecting this guy to be the stud. But what happens if one, just one more guy gets hurt?
Sure.
And you've got two. So how confident are you in Chase Ketterer potentially getting live reps, for example? Now, you and I have seen Chase Ketterer in action in high school, and we got to see a little, you know, we saw him on, you know, some coverage last year when he got to be, you know, we ended up being the scout team player of the week when he was prepping for Navy and all that. They gave him some reps, I think, like on kick coverage and that kind of stuff, you know, so he got to do some of that kind of stuff, but it's different, you know, and I'm sure that he could probably split out and, you know, go, you know, in the slot or, you know, do some different things like that as well. But he's a really good athlete. But what does that look like now if you're actually asking him on game day, you know, to go out there and take live reps? in a game, you know, if somebody else is hurt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what I will say is that, so if you got the three guys and one guy gets hurt, so now you're down to two scholarship running backs. Do I feel comfortable using one of those, like a Chase Ketterer or a Justin Fisher or whatever? Do I feel comfortable using those guys for what they would be asked to do? Basically running zone read between the tackles? Yeah, I would be comfortable with that. I really wouldn't have a problem with that as long as you still have, you know, the two guys taking the majority of those reps and you bring in one guy to maybe spell one, you know, somebody else or what have you. Plus, you've also got the opportunity of Avery Davis. If he's healthy, you could put him back there.
See, I'm leery about Avery Davis because that's a guy who's coming off an ACL as it is.
Sure.
You know, like he's – it's like – because I had thought about that where, you know, he's obviously played some running. He's played virtually every skill position there is to play on either side of the ball at this point, right? But because he's also coming off an injury, and then, you're going to move him back to running back as well. And then you're also thin at wide receiver still. So that's
– no, that's fair.
That's what would make me, pump the brakes on that a little bit.
I am 100% biased because I've seen Chase and I've seen Justin, and I know what they can do with the football in their hands. And
right.
I trust them. I trust those two guys. I really do. And, again, if I'm being offered the opportunity to either use those two guys – or a transfer, I'm using those two guys.
Okay.
Because they're already there. They know what we expect. They're Notre Dame guys. I'm not wasting. I'm not using a scholarship on those two guys. They already understand that they're preferred walk-ons, etc. Those are the guys I would feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
Now, another injury comes into
play.
And
they're real smart as well. I mean, you know, so again, I think
absolutely.
They're going to, you know, Justin's just getting on campus and doing that kind of stuff because he's an incoming freshman. But, you know, Ketter's been around for a little while. I think either one of them is going to absorb virtually anything in the offense that you want them to run. I agree with that. You know, yeah. I agree that they can do certain things, but you know, again, like if it came to an emergency situation where all of a sudden, you know, you're getting guys banged up out there, that would be, I guess, my biggest concern.
Sure. And you're taking a chance.
You got to
get
to that point first.
You're taking a chance within the injury thing is the scariest part of this. Because you could make it through a whole season with three running backs, no problem.
Right.
The problem's injuries. If one of those guys get hurt, now we're talking a different scenario. So basically, in my mind, you need to get to October. You need to get through September, and you got to get to October. And October's right around the time that Logan Diggs should come back. Well, now you've got four again.
Hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully.
Right.
No, right. Absolutely.
Right.
I've got October kind of circle for Logan Diggs to come back. And
you know, and hopefully if you get to that point and if maybe somebody else is dinged up, but Diggs is able to come back, that you kind of trade one for the other. And, you know, but again, it's
and
like,
you can kind of work him back in, et cetera. Yeah, right.
You've really got to manage some things, though, I think, when you're talking about three run. And, you know, because like the other thing, too, is the fact the impact, you know, two different things. One, it's definitely a plus that you've got a running quarterback, a mobile quarterback, where they're going to
absolutely
be able to get something in the running game from Tyler Buchner, where he can kind of substitute, you know, for some of that. Kind of like we saw with Brandon Wimbush a few years back, you know, and that kind of thing.
Yes,
where like
absolutely
that can, like you still need running yards, but you know, his presence on the field to begin with, assuming it is him, but, you know, we do assume that it is him. His presence on the field,
sure,
as we saw right away last year, will automatically open up some things that were not necessarily
right
open when Jack Cohn was on the field. So
no question. No question. And the other thing is, and somebody mentioned it again, Sean Cain, he says Davis and Lindsay should get the ball on run plays anyway. He's absolutely right. Look, we've seen what Braden Lindsay can do with the ball in his hands on an end around or, you know, a jet sweep, things of that nature. I would like to see all the receivers be able to do that. Some, you know, I think Avery Davis could be one of those guys. There are ways to parse out the runs around the guys that you already have. And we
right
have been at practice. We have seen them working on stuff of this nature. And I don't think I'm, you know, giving away the playbook here, but they're going to be getting other guys in the mix when it comes to the run game. And that's back when they had five guys healthy. So that's part of the playbook. And so I think that you've got Tyler Buchner. So it's not just a power run game with the running backs, right? So you're going to be able to parse that out into different areas. And I think that's only going to help the situation.
Right. Sean Michael says, Sean, love the show and the name. Thank you for your insight and perspective. Vince, as always, bringing the heat. Thank you. And Sean Michael, I don't know if that's your first and last name, but my middle name is Michael. So, oh. Sean Michael, we are, you know, jeez, on the same page there. We're simpatico with all this. So,
absolutely. And I do want to address this comment right here. It says, we may need a tight end to act as a fullback for a carry here and there. What I will say to that is there are guys on the roster who are listed as fullbacks for the first time in a long time at Notre Dame. And those guys are Justin Fisher, Davis Sherwood, and Barrett Liebertritz. So all three of those guys are walk-ons, but they're all listed as fullbacks.
I didn't realize that Justin Fisher was listed as a fullback already. Yeah. But again, he was a triple option quarterback at Mishawaka High School. And Vince and I have called Mishawaka games for the last few years. So we have seen, we saw almost, well, because of COVID, I missed parts of one season. You were there for good chunks though still, but you know, we've seen pretty much all the snaps that Justin Fisher has taken. This guy is built like a fullback as well.
100%.
So it makes sense. It makes sense. You know, and, even though he was an option quarterback, it makes sense that he would be listed as a fullback for Notre Dame.
And somebody asked me on the message board about Justin Fisher and his ability to carry the ball, et cetera. His sophomore and junior year, he was much more svelte, I guess, and he was running away from guys. I mean, his speed was killer in this neck of the woods, right?
Yeah.
And then his senior year, he put on what we'll call armor, right? I mean, he bulked up big time. I think he lost a little bit of his speed, to be honest with you, but he looked more like a fullback than a quarterback. Yeah. I mean, he barely fit into his jersey. He was
gun show.
And he was bouncing off of dudes because of that. You know what I mean? And so a fullback makes a ton of sense at the next level for him. He's going to be a super athletic type of fullback, and he's not afraid to snot bubble some guys too. So I like that move, to be honest with you. And so, if they're planning on using they got three guys listed at fullback. If they're planning on using a fullback, that's kind of exciting too, to be honest with you.
You know, now the other part of this, because you start off with a thin wide receiver room to begin with. I mean, we like the front end guys, I think, you know, Braden Lindsay, Lorenzo Styles, Deion Colsey, Jaden Thomas, and then again, Avery Davis and Joe Wilkins both coming back from injuries. You know, so you've got some guys who can play there, but again, you've got two guys coming off of injuries. You know, Lindsay, who's been, you know, banged up from time to time, of course, in his career, though, you know, healthy last year. But I guess my point is, when you look at Chris Tyree, like especially when you look at what he did in the Fiesta Bowl as a receiver, 6 catches for over 100 yards, career day as a receiver in that game, and we're all kind of counting on him to factor into the passing game as well. You know, just like when you're talking about three guys out there, and then you kind of start talking about, you're really looking at that GPS closely.
Absolutely.
Because you don't, you know, because while you want him to factor in, and because they are thinner at wide receiver and kind of how you move these different pieces around, you know, there might have to be some give and take on just how much, you know, he is able to contribute in some different ways if he's going to be the lead running back in this whole thing.
Well, and that's a really good point. And Brian and I have talked a lot in the past about Tyree and kind of where his magic number of touches is that, you know, maybe 10 to 14 a game kind of a thing. And if that's still going to be the case, you're going to have to rely on those other two guys a lot more. And by touches, it's carries, it's catches, it's all of that different stuff. And if you want to keep him kind of at his best, I think that's kind of where you need him to be. If he's getting more than that, well, now it starts to affect the return game and everything else. And I think you make a really good point about Avery Davis. You want to keep the wide receivers as much wide receivers as you possibly can. You still want to use the running backs in the slot, moving them around. You have to continue to be multiple. You do not want your playbook to be hindered by the personnel, right? You still want to be able to move guys around. So you're going to have to be smart about it. And all the tech that Notre Dame has at their disposal is going to allow them to do that. I trust Tommy Rees and Coach McCullough and Coach Stuckey and you know, the whole group. I trust those guys to do it right. But it's going to be a balancing act. There's no question about it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and then I think you just mentioned a second ago the kickoffs. You know, like, do you want Chris Tyree as much as a home run threat as he is that we saw last year. Do you want him back there returning kicks if you're down to three scholarship running backs? You know, does that open up to somebody else? I think that it probably does, you know, so it's going to be really interesting just to see again how they manage this as you know, you open up with a big game and then you kind of have some time where I think, especially maybe when you look at the other opponents and how you want to go about attacking them, you can, they're definitely going to be some opponents you can sort of manage reps against.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially, you know, we talked about getting to October, right? I mean, outside of Ohio State, huge game. Don't get me wrong. Huge game. September's not that difficult. If I remember off the top of my head. So you can definitely manage carries against those opponents, you know, in September. And let me pull it up just so I'm speaking from truth here. Okay. But you've got Ohio State, you've got Marshall, you've got Cal, and you've got North Carolina, right? That's your September slate. I'm not high on where North Carolina is going to be this year. And I, you know, that's a different conversation really for a different time, but especially against Marshall and Cal, those are games that Notre Dame should win going away. So those are opportunities to get some other guys involved, to put guys on a pitch count, so to speak. You can definitely get away with certain things, right? Now, BYU is going to be tough on October, and then you get Stanford, UNLV, Syracuse in October. Okay, well, welcome back, Logan Diggs. Let's ease you back in against, you know, I don't think Stanford's going to be all that great, and then you got UNLV and Syracuse. Okay. Then we go November 5th to Clemson. So hopefully you're back to full strength and you've got four guys and now we're not even talking about it anymore, right?
Yeah,
so,
I just, you know, like you talk about Stanford. It's like when you start looking at their national, like their rankings, you know, like run defense, run offense, all those different, they were like so bad. It was like back, it was like pre-Harbaugh. Like they had literally hadn't been that bad in most of those stat categories since before Jim Harbaugh got there, you know. It's like they really sunk back to what Stanford was for a long time. So you're absolutely right, you know, that because even if they improve, I just can't see them making that much improvement from one season to the next, especially just the way their recruiting has gone in recent years as well. So, but I guess that's, you know, we'll talk more,
we'll
about
cover
that
them, don't worry point. We'll cover the Fighting Trees.
That's right All right, so that's kind of the running back situation right now. Again, there's a lot to navigate. There's a lot of time as well. They do have some bodies, you know, that they can figure some things out. And it's going to be really interesting because, again, the two, you know, skill position groups offensively, running back, wide receiver, are both, there's just enough question marks now because of these injuries at both of them that it's going to make things going to make things really intriguing for a bit, just to see kind of how they decide to operate. It's kind of like almost back to a couple of years ago when, you know, they were so run heavy and all the tight ends, you know, the multiple tight ends and stuff like that. You know, like, because, you know, and that's something that we haven't really touched on. Does this, you know, maybe this means that we end up seeing more tight ends than we thought we were going to see, you know?
Not yet. I don't think not yet. I don't think anything changes with the way that they want to do things with this scenario. Now, if more injuries occur, then obviously you have to adapt and you have to adjust. But if that's the only season-ending injury that we need to talk about, then I don't think anything changes. I don't see Tommy Rees being in favor of the three tight end set as their base as it has been in the past. I just don't. That's not Tommy Rees. You're not. He's an NFL type guy. His playbook is very NFL centered, in my opinion, and I don't know when the last time you saw a three tight end set in the NFL. You know what I mean? He'll do whatever he has to do to win games. I will say that he's not an idiot. Okay. But I don't see that being, hey, first down, let's go three tight ends. You know, I don't necessarily see that being the case, but we'll see. I mean, I don't see the playbook changing a whole lot right off the bat, unless something crazy happens between now and then.
68 days until the season starts. And again, that means about what? Five, six weeks until training camp starts. Yeah. So boom.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be July on Friday. So it is. this is approaching rapidly, which is exciting.
No doubt. Very exciting. No doubt. All right. So Link Jarrett's gone after 3 years in a College World Series. He was introduced as the Florida State baseball coach this morning. They held a press conference for him down there. Link Jarrett goes home. And, you know, so that leaves Notre Dame now to find his replacement. Yeah. And, you know, there have been a few names floated around, the most prominent one being the one that we probably hoped was going to go, but it didn't quite end up that way.
Would have been storybook.
Our man, Paul Maneri, the former LSU and Notre Dame head coach. He retired about a year ago at this time and had him on the show. He was my first guest, very first show, Paul Maneri. And you can still find that on our YouTube channel right now. And, you know, the interview that I did with him, he talked glowingly about Notre Dame, talked glowingly about Link Jarrett. You know, these reports started popping up Friday that he was the primary, you know, sort of focus, or at least, you know, the one of the initial candidates for the job. But I talked to him Friday, and I know some other people obviously did too, but I talked to him and he said, not coming out of retirement. He's not ready to jump back into the grind and all that stuff. Does not want to come out of retirement, even for Notre Dame. So unfortunately, Vince, that's not happening.
That stinks. I totally understand where he's coming from. Yeah. He has devoted his life to college baseball. It has had all the success that you can ever want in a college baseball situation. I mean, he's in my book, he's a Hall of Famer. That would have been awesome for him to walk back in the door at Notre Dame. Obviously, things have changed since the last time he was here, but it would have been pretty darn sweet to see him kind of take the mantle and then hand it off to somebody else maybe a few years down the line. But I totally understand where he's coming from. I'm sure retirement's awesome. I'm sure golf is awesome. I'm sure the weather down in Louisiana is awesome. He doesn't want to trade that for South Bend. I get that completely.
As long as it's not hurricane season.
Yeah, well,
it's awesome.
Solid point. But, you know, when you told me that was a possibility a few days ago, man, I was fired up. But, you know, well, let's see where things go.
Me too. I was kidding with him because Parisi's was always one of his favorite local establishments. I was like, Parisi's wasn't enough to bring you out of retirement, Paul. Come on. You know, it's like somebody's got to up the ante, I guess.
No doubt. But no doubt.
So I thought what we'd do is kind of run through, you know, maybe who is, who isn't a candidate kind of thing. There's someone who at the start of the day I thought would have been a pretty good candidate, but it sounds like we can cross him off the list. That's Maryland head coach Rob Vaughn, because just a couple of hours ago, literally, Maryland announced they've signed him to a contract extension through 2027. He had just led Maryland to, you know, the best regular season they have ever had. They've been in the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. He's only 34 years old, so there's like all these good things going on there. And, you know, Maryland's in the Big Ten compared to Notre Dame and the ACC and all that stuff. So it would have seemed like, you know, a nice leap for him, but they signed him to a contract extension, so it sounds like that one's not happening. Another one I think you can cross off. Well, I would say with 99% certainty, a name that has popped up the last couple times this vacancy here at Notre Dame has opened, and that is Cliff Godwin, who is the head coach at East Carolina. He's a former Paul Maneri assistant. He was with Paul his last year here at Notre Dame in 2006, went with him to LSU. From there, he went with another Maneri assistant, Terry Rooney, when Rooney got the head coaching job at Central Florida. So he was there for a couple of years. Godwin was also at Ole Miss with them the last time they went to the College World Series before this year. But he has already been, I didn't even realize this, 8 years already. He's been at East Carolina. He's 304, 151, and 1 with three straight American Conference championships. It's been like four super regionals that he's been to. They're in the NCAA tournament virtually every year. It's, you know, I realize like if you're going to compare brand names, Notre Dame to East Carolina, like, you know, an ACC versus American, it sounds like a step up. But one, East Carolina is Cliff Godwin's alma mater. Two, you've got the weather down there. Three, he has been uber successful at East Carolina. Again, it's like four super regionals and in the NCAA tournament virtually every year. And like we talk about facilities, you know, being a thing, the facilities at East Carolina, you know, you combine that with the weather, it just blows Notre Dame away.
I'm sure.
So yeah, they hosted a super regional this year. Texas beat them, but you know, like the place was packed and the place is probably at least twice the size of Notre Dame's. And, you know, they've got great weather down there. He's got great, you know, recruiting hotbed and all that stuff. And again, it's his alma mater. So I don't see Cliff Godwin leaving East Carolina to come to Notre Dame. So
that's a shame, because I remember when he was here at Notre Dame, he's a really, really good coach. I mean, that would that would be a huge pickup for Notre Dame if that was the case.
Yep. He's still like early 40s as well, you know. So another one that I've seen floated that I think I would, again, with 99% certainty, say cross off the list, and that is Jim Penders at UConn, simply for the, you know, a couple of different things. One, again, Jim Penders is a UConn alum. He's been the head coach there since 2004. They've been to the NCAA tournament 8 times. He took them to their second super regional this year. They played Stanford in the super regionals, but he just turned down Michigan last week. And I guess he's got a connection with Michigan AD Ward Manuel. So he turned down Michigan, got a raise to stay at UConn, you know, released this statement saying, you know, I love UConn. I'm not leaving UConn. So if he's going to turn down Michigan and somebody he knows, I just can't see him, you know, making the jump to Notre Dame. So, yeah. Now there's another one. Again, this guy has popped up the last couple times the Notre Dame job has come open. His name is Christian Mihalik. He's a Notre Dame alum. He graduated from Notre Dame in 93. So he played for Pat Murphy, pitched in the big leagues for a few years for 4 different teams. And he's currently a pitching instructor in the Miami Marlins organization. Now, his name has popped up again the last couple times there's been a vacancy here. I guess he has interest in the job. I keep hearing this, that Mihalik has interest in Notre Dame. I don't know him. I've heard really good things about him. You know, talk to other former players who do know him. You know, there's like nothing bad about Christian Mihalik. But I guess my only point would be this. If you want to be a college head coach, why aren't you coaching in college somewhere right now? Because I don't think, you know, your biggest qualification, you know, like, I get it. It's your alma mater. You want to come back and all that stuff. It just seems like if you really like, if coaching at Notre Dame is your goal, you should be a pitching coach someplace else in college right now, figuring out how things work, because he's got a ton of, you know, big league and professional pitching background on his resume, but he has no college on his resume. So I just find it hard, you know, to see a bit of a leap. Who's gonna, exactly.
Yeah. So, and that's, it's interesting to me when you bring up a guy like him, because I feel like Notre Dame is in kind of a position. Now they're in a great position right now, coming off a College World Series. I think they've got some momentum, and that's going to be helpful in the search for a coach. But any coach is going to do his due diligence and look at the Notre Dame situation. And if anybody listened to Link Jarrett's press conference this morning, I mean, he kind of outlined the difficulties of coaching at Notre Dame. I mean, and we'll get into all that, I'm sure, in a little bit as far as how he left and all of that. But it's not easy to coach at Notre Dame, and not many guys have had a ton of success at Notre Dame, right? Now, they've got momentum, and that's great. But it's going to be – that this would be a very difficult job to jump into without any kind of experience as a head coach, I will say that. But Notre Dame also needs to kind of find that diamond in the rough as well, because of everything that's at Notre Dame.
Let's say, and I'm just throwing this out there. Let's say Chuck Restano leaves to become the pitching coach at Florida State. You know, Chuck's been here for 12 years. His wife, Lizzie, is the associate coach for the softball team. But let's just say Chuck Restano leaves to become the pitching coach at Florida State. And then whoever becomes the head coach here at Notre Dame and doesn't have a pitching coach, then maybe that's, you know, kind of a obviously, you'd have to go through the interview, and whoever the head coach is would have to be comfortable with him. But that, you know, maybe that's, you know, kind of the entry in, you know, because again, this guy's been around pitching for a long time. But it just, again, to make that leap from, you know, pitching instructor in an organization to head coach of a college baseball team, that's a big jump.
It's a huge leap. Yeah. It's a huge leap. No
there's
question.
So many, there's so many things, you know, one being recruiting, but so many other things that you have to be aware of running a college baseball program. And I just think that that would be a lot. Just because you played in college does not mean that you're necessarily ready to jump in and be a head coach. And again, I've got nothing against the guy. I don't know the guy. I've heard good things about him. But that's just too big of a jump for me, I think.
Yeah.
So who could be the candidates? You know, the two current assistants right now, Rich Wallace and Chuck Restano, I think, you know, both make sense as candidates. I would say this, and I'll kind of, you know, Rich Wallace has been, you know, he's basically a hitting coach in the 3 years Link Jarrett was at Notre Dame. He's got 16 years of experience as an assistant. So he's been around, you know, right now he's been at Creighton. He's been at Jacksonville. He's been at High Point. So he's, you know, again, he's been around. More importantly now, he's got all that experience and he's been here the last 3 years working under Link Jarrett. And I think the biggest benefit, like if you're talking about Rich Wallace or Chuck Rostano, the biggest benefit, and Rostano has been the pitching coach now here for 12 years for two different head coaches, Jarrett and Mick Aoki.
Right.
The biggest benefit for either one is they are both familiar with Link Jarrett and what he did
sure.
here. Link Jarrett's system. Because, sure. because Link Jarrett, Siri was talking to me there. Link Jarrett yeah. and the turnaround that he did had more to do, you know, than just a coach coming in. It's like, oh, these guys were ready to win. You know, he jumped in and, you know, they just, you know, that's why he was successful. I mean, he talked from day one about our system. And you don't hear baseball coaches say our system. You know, yeah. it's like football system. That's one thing. You don't hear baseball coaches say that. But, you know, like, so there was so much intention with what they did with everything, you know, like talking to some players and stuff like that, seeing their, you know, watching them practice, you know, he was always, you know, like stopping, like, okay, what were you trying to do on that pitch? You know, just a lot of individual focus on everything. And the advanced scouting that they did was so beyond anything that they used to do, you know, prior to him being here. You know, And even in college baseball, you know, there is advanced scouting, but like there's a reason that those guys seemed like they were prepared for just about every pitcher because, you know, they had pretty detailed scouting reports. He talked about how they would give the players as much as they wanted, but, you know, like, okay, you're going to face this pitcher. Here's what you should be expecting in this count. You know, what kind of pitch, all these different things, location, you know, look for this. In this location of the plate, you know, lock in on a certain, you know, again. So I guess my point is Rich Wallace, Chuck Rostano, they were there every day to know what the focus was, you know, with Link Jarrett that really put these guys over the top. So if, you know, if that had a lot to do with the success they
sure.
had, you know, so I think that would be the biggest benefit to keeping either one of them around as the head coach is they know what it took to get this ship turned around at Notre Dame.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always good to have that specific, you know, how they did it. And you just kind of pick up the torch and, you know, you can tweak things here and there because now your program and things like
right.
that, but you understand
right.
what it took because the last guys that were here weren't able to bring Notre Dame to where they are now. And Link was able to do that in a very short period of time, frankly. And I mean, even in the COVID shortened season, they were already off to a great start that year, right? And unfortunately, they obviously had to cut the season short, but they were on fire, you know, and they picked up right where they left off in 21 and then again in 22. So, you know, things were headed in the right direction. He did it very quickly. And guys with experience under that program, I don't see that as a negative, that's for sure.
Yeah. Larry asked, what about facilities upgrades for the baseball program? And, you know, according, you know, in the video that Link Jarrett had, that outgoing video that he, and again, we're going to talk more specifically on that here in a few minutes, but he talked about how Jack Swarbrick would have done anything to get him to stay. So I'm assuming that means that he would have been willing to, you know, go out and, you know, find some people to donate money. That's what it's going to take. You know, if you care about Notre Dame baseball and you want to see them, you don't want to hear these you know conversations, you know, assuming they're in the NCAA picture over the next few years. You don't want to hear, well, why aren't they hosting this, or, you know, why are they going on the road for that? You know, I would say, if you know donors who want to donate some money to Notre Dame baseball, and I'm talking about considerable money to Notre Dame baseball, the only way they're going to get any facilities upgrades at Notre Dame is if they get that cash in hand. I mean, that's how all facilities work
sure.
at Notre Dame. They've got to have the cash in hand before yep. they're breaking ground on anything.
And I will also say this, and this is not a giant secret, okay? At Notre Dame, there have been guys that have wanted to donate to the baseball program. But the way Notre Dame is doing things, they also have to donate an equal amount to the softball program. And that has turned off some donors. And that's just a fact. I've been told that by people in the know, and that they're like, well, I want to donate to the baseball program. And that has turned some guys off. And that's a problem in my opinion, but I know it's Title IX and all that, and I get it, but that's frustrating.
And we talked about this before. I mean, you know, like, because the charter, why doesn't Notre Dame baseball charter more? Well, because, you know, and this is from when I was, you know, my time doing play-by-play for the program. If you're going to pay to have the baseball team charter, the softball team also has to charter, you know, but it's just what you're talking about right there. So you've got to donate to both. And I guess what I don't understand about that, maybe it's because baseball already had the baseball stadium, but softball obviously got Melissa Cook Stadium built because of a huge donation from Melissa Cook's family. But, you know, that is more recent, I guess, you know, so like, I don't know. That's Notre Dame's own policy. And
that's frustrating. And I get it
over there. Yeah. So I think that's maybe something that, you know, like when you look at that sort of middle ground between Melissa Cook and Frank Eck, you know, they've got the older batting cages and stuff over there, you know, like maybe if you rip all that out, if somebody were willing to donate to both, then you could make some kind of common structure that both sides could use, you know, whether it's you know, seating on one side or, you know, suites or whatever it happens to be. So some kind of concourse, you know, where there's kind of a common grandstand or something like that. It's like that's an unfortunate obstacle, but it's one that I think would benefit both in the long run because like softball has only hosted the one NCAA regional in the time that Deanna Gumpf has been the head coach there as well. And I don't know. It's going to take money either way.
Yeah. Bottom line, it's going to take money and it's going to take, directed money. And one thing Link Jarrett said was, you know, Jack Swarbrick was going to do everything in his power to keep him there. And so, you know, I'm sure that facilities had something to do with that. And he kind of mentioned that in his outgoing speech. And, you know, I believe that. I do believe that. And I hope that that's true. And I have no reason to believe that it's not true. And so, you know, hopefully we're going to see some changes in the near future.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to rip through kind of a short list. We still got some rapid fire we've got to get to here tonight, Vince. But here's kind of a short list of some other guys who I think would be
okay
potential candidates at Notre Dame. Central Michigan coach Jordan Bischel. He's only 41 years old. He's been a head coach for 10 years. He's had a lot of success at every stop along the way. NAIA national tournament a couple of times, Division II tournament a couple of times. He's been at Central Michigan for 4 years. The only time they didn't go to the NCAA tournament was the COVID year. So tons of success. He has already interviewed at Michigan. I haven't heard anything as far as, you know, what could be happening there because Eric Bakich, the Michigan head coach, of course, left for Clemson. Justin Hare, the Campbell head coach, another guy who's only 41 years old. He's been at Campbell for 8 years. They've won the Big South, been to the NCAA tournament the last 4 years. He, just like both Cliff Godwin, who we mentioned earlier, and Link Jarrett, he's a guy who came up when the Clemson search came open. So I think, you know, he's kind of an interesting one, a lot of success down there in the Big South. Steve Owens at Rutgers is another guy, 56, predominantly kind of an East Coast guy. But, you know, again, a guy with success. He went to the Division III College World Series four different times, took Lemoyne to the Division II NCAA tournament a couple of times, took Bryant to the NCAA tournament three times. And then now at Rutgers, he's in his third year there, and they went 44-15, took second place in the Big Ten this year, didn't get an NCAA tournament bid. And I know that facilities at Rutgers are not as good as Notre Dame's. Like, whatever you want to say about Notre Dame's facilities, I know for a fact Rutgers aren't as good, even though they've tried to do some upgrades recently. So I think Owens out there at Rutgers would be a potential interesting candidate for Notre Dame.
All right. I've written those down. So you're going to have to, it better come from that list. Okay.
I'm going to, but again, you know, it's like, I don't, it's, I, I'm really curious to see kind of what happens like with Rich Wallace and Chuck Restano, because I think that they are both guys who have been assistants for a long time, who are, you know, and again, they were a big part of the success in these last 3 years under Link Jarrett, and, you know, they kind of know the secret sauce. So I think that they would be, I think they're both really intriguing potential candidates to become a first-time head coach because of what they've helped this program do over the last 3 years.
Sounds good to me. I love Notre Dame baseball, frankly, and so I hope that whoever it goes to, it's a good choice. It's not just a knee-jerk reaction, and they get somebody who is going to carry the torch and move forward. So I'm excited.
So YouTube, Salty Virginia Peanuts wants to know who Siri is suggesting. I don't know, but Siri is really driving me crazy. Two different times she is.
You're gonna,
and she's ready to do it again just because I said her name.
She's gonna suggest me and you, and we'll go ahead and we'll take over the baseball program together, and we'll bring it back, baby. Don't worry, just book the hotels in Omaha now.
All right, Vince, let's do some rapid fire. Fill in the blanks.
Okay,
why not? Notre Dame baseball. The way Link Jarrett left Notre Dame compared to the way Brian Kelly left Notre Dame was blank.
Completely opposite. More mature. I mean, how many different things could you put in this blank? I mean, you could write a book about the right way and the wrong way to do things, and those would be your poster children. Okay. Because Link did it 100% the right way. He explained it to his players the right way. You know, it never came up beforehand. He was totally transparent. And even in his introductory press conference at Florida State today, he brought up Notre Dame and how much he loves those guys and the way that they played in Knoxville. And even when press were asking him questions about Florida State, he would go back and start talking about Notre Dame. Like, it is very clear that there was one job he was going to leave Notre Dame for, and that was to go home to Florida State, which I don't think anybody would condone him for, and he did it 100% the right way. I was very impressed, and I guess I would say that I didn't expect anything different from Link, from what I've been able to gather about him and knowing some people that know him and things of that nature. I would have expected nothing different, but it was still refreshing to hear everything that he said over the past few days and what he said this morning and all of the above. He's a great dude, man.
No, absolutely. Night and day different. And, you know, he said all the right things, hit all the right things. And, you know, the fact that he stood up there in front of his team and, you know, talked about they're his family, but he's going to Florida State because it's also his family. And you know, and maybe that's like, if I'm going to play devil's advocate, I really would be curious, like if Link Jarrett's family, like his real family, his parents still live in Tallahassee.
Right.
He did go to Florida State, so he does have that connection.
And he grew up in Tallahassee.
If you took his literal family out of the question, you know, would he still be going to, you know, that's
it would have been a more difficult decision.
Right. Because it made it very easy for him,
sure,
you know, to like to soften it with the Notre Dame kid, you know, his Notre Dame players. It's like, you're still going to be my family, but this is literally my family. So it definitely helped soften that blow. You know, when he positions it that way, it's like, I'm literally going, you know, because he talked about, you know, my parents and my wife's parents, they don't have other people around to help them out where they may, because they're obviously getting a little bit older, that, you know, they don't have people. That definitely helps soften things when you're telling a team that you're leaving behind, you know, because no matter how good a terms a coach thinks he or she is leaving on, you know, there's kind of going to be some lingering you know, hard feelings from some of the kids, but it definitely helps when he has his literal family, his flesh and blood that he is going back to Florida State.
Well, I think it's twofold, to be perfectly honest with you. I think the literal family, his parents and his in-laws are there. And he talked about that this morning. I can drop in on my parents. I can drop in on my wife's parents, you know, all of those different things. But I think you add the other level of the fact that he did go to Florida State. He was an integral part in three World Series teams at Florida State. His wife was a cheerleader at Florida State. I mean, even if they didn't live there, that's his school. You know what I mean? And so I think that's part of it as well. So if you take the parents out of it, you still have the fact that he was a four-year starter.
Absolutely.
That's still a huge part of it. You know what I mean? And I think, so if you take the parents out of it, if he didn't go to school there, if his wife didn't go to school there, then you still have the fact that Florida State is an upgrade from a baseball perspective.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so
it was interesting that he also talked about, hey, maybe we need to do, you know, a little work here at Dick Houser Stadium. You know, even though, as we've talked about on this show, it's had a renovation more recently than Frank Eck Stadium here.
Frank Eck houses 1,800 fans. 1,800. That's a bit of a difference down there in Florida State. I purposely went and looked up their stadium, and it's a little different than Notre Dame's. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, it is. But, you know, he handled things first class all the way. You got to the College World Series, limited the distraction that was after Mike Martin Jr. got fired. I believe it was June 10th.
Roommate, by the way.
Right. They were roommates.
A whole other thing.
Yeah. And so, it's like there's so many levels to this because you know, you've got the legendary Mike Martin Sr. was there for 40 plus years. His son takes over the program. They both interviewed for that job 3 years ago.
Right.
Junior ends up getting the job. Link Jarrett ends up coming here.
Right.
And now, 3 years later, Mike Martin Jr., even though they got to the NCAA tournament the last 2 years, he was fired essentially. You know, I think what triggered it was Link Jarrett's name was connected to Clemson when the Clemson job came open, when Monty Lee was fired. His name comes up there, and Florida State's like, we're not letting this guy get away now. Look at what he is, you know, this is obviously even before the College World Series. Look at what he has done at Notre Dame. We're not letting him get away this time. Right. So they fire Mike Martin Jr. and boom, here's Link Jarrett after the College World Series back at his alma mater now.
Which has to be tough. I mean, you're one of your really good friends gets fired. You take his job and you're supposed to go to an introductory press conference talking about how you're going to change everything from what your best friend just did. And he just received the National Coach of the Year that's named after the guy's dad who was his coach. Like there's just so many levels to this whole thing. And it's crazy. I mean, I'm happy for Link. I mean, he did a really good job at Notre Dame. Of course, I'm sad that he's not there, but I think he made the right decision to go back to Florida State. And
yeah.
I really, really hope this is a great opportunity for Notre Dame to hire the right guy to come in and continue on with what Notre Dame is doing. That's going to be tough.
You know, we had Scott Lawler, a former Irish assistant coach, on last week.
Yeah.
He talked about how when they hired Link Jarrett, they went out of what they had done in the past. Because, like, you look at any of the previous coaches, Paul Maneri came from Air Force. Dave Schrag came from Evansville. He was, you know, predominantly, you know, like Midwest type coach.
Sure.
Nick Aoki was a Northeast guy from up there in, Boston College is where he came from. Yeah, but he had been at Columbia, I believe. Yeah, one of the other Ivy League schools. So it's like Northeast, you know. So they had kind of gone – hiring these northern guys before, and Link Jarrett, you know, from the minute you heard his voice, it was very obvious he was not from the Midwest or the Northeast. He was a southern guy, and so he brought something completely different to Notre Dame baseball. So if they, you know, like if they don't hire one of these assistants, I would think that they really kind of want to hit that. You know, there are so many good coaches in that part of the country, I think, to draw from. So. Okay, fill in the blank on this next one. It's blank that Arch Manning's commitment tweet to Texas has received a record 221,000+ likes on Twitter. In other words, that commitment tweet has the most tweets of any commitment tweet ever. I don't know exactly who keeps track of this stuff.
Yeah, seriously.
Good question. This morning, but what do you think about that?
That is a testament to what his uncles have done, in their careers. That's what it is. Is he a good quarterback? Yeah, he's a good quarterback. There's no question about it. Is he the number one overall recruit in the 23 class? I don't think so. I think his last name bolstered him up there. And this has been, his recruitment has been a ridiculous whirlwind the whole time because of his last name.
And that's, period. You know, it's like he's not even the son of Eli or Peyton.
No,
he's the nephew.
It's his uncle.
You know, it's like Koopa, you know, Koopa's son. Yeah. The guy who played wide receiver instead of quarterback. This is really just setting me up for, I just want to say Notre Dame fans have some work to do. You're supposed to be one of the biggest fan bases out there. So the next time, you know, one of these big, you know, CJ Carr's tweets didn't get 220. They didn't even get 100,000 likes. It's like, you've got some work to do. Okay, so go back on CJ Carr's tweets.
And you know, start liking it, baby. Let's go.
That's right. And the next time some big recruit commits to Notre Dame, you need to do some work and, you know, boost these tweets up there. I think you're right, though, Vince. The Manning name went a long way, and you throw in Texas and all that stuff.
And that was like his first tweet ever, by the way, was his commitment to Texas. That was his first tweet ever.
Yeah. Just crazy.
Good for him. Enjoy the Lone Star State. See what happens.
That's right. Okay, so in yesterday's College World Series, first of all, did you watch it?
No.
Okay.
As soon as Notre Dame was out, I was out.
Okay.
I'm that guy.
I hope you understand.
I did. I understood what was going on.
I sent you kind of the transcript of what we're going to talk about here. I hope I explained it well enough. So a runner from Oklahoma, he dropped down a sacrifice bunt. He's called out for running inside the baseline in foul territory because he ran into the first baseman who was trying to field the throw over to first. So he was originally called safe. They went to instant replay because Ole Miss challenged it. It was obvious that he was, you know, outside of that running lane, which is to the right of the baseline.
Yep.
He was inside the baseline in fair territory. It was obvious. So he was called out because he runs into the first baseman's arm. My question, do you buy or sell that baseball, and maybe even just college baseball, but I think you could make a case for it at other levels as well because of plays like this.
Sure.
Should they just go to that double bag like softball has so that the fielder has one bag?
Do they do that in college softball?
I believe so, but I would have to double
check. Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So again, the fielder has one bag. The runner has that outside. You know, you're basically incentivizing them staying, you know, outside in that box rather than in fair territory. What do you think?
Let me preface this with a story, Sean.
Okay.
Story time with Uncle Vince.
Sweet.
As the head coach this year, I had a game where my first baseman had to reach back into the baseline for a ball that was up the line, and his forearm snapped in half in a collision. Broke his arm. My first baseman broke his arm in a play not unlike what you are describing right here in the College World Series. Okay, right. The only difference was the kid was in foul territory during the collision because my kid reached over the foul line. So he was safe. I mean, it was a clean play. It was just very, 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 very unfortunate for us that he broke his arm halfway through our season. And with that said, I still say I do not want the double bag. I don't like it. I'm selling it. They give you a running lane to the outside of the bag, and that's fine. You barely have to touch the bag in order to be called safe at first base on the outside of the bag, and you can run through it. So I don't need a whole extra bag getting in the way. We don't need to paint it orange. The first time I ever saw that was when I went to my future father-in-law's softball game when it was a bunch of 60-plus-year-old dudes playing softball, and they had the double bag, and one was painted orange. I didn't like it then. I don't like it now. No, I will sell that all the way. And in the off chance that there is a collision, I guess that's part of the game.
See, I'm going the other way. I kind of like the idea. And yes, they do have it in college softball. I was just checking while you were
very
doing
good.
That. Well, maybe now somebody else says they don't. Maybe it's international, but I just found some photos
that
tended to say that they did. So I'm not I think they should just because of the whole thing. Because you just, you know, you end up with these guys who don't necessarily intentionally, you know, run inside the line, but they end up inside the line. Well, if the bag is on the outside and they give them a bag on the outside, they will stay on the outside because you're talking about, you know, more than, you know, a foot of difference right there. I guess it's an odd play. You know, you don't see it a whole lot. you know, but again, like when it, you know, like players can, you know, the first baseman or pitchers can get spiked at first base. There are different collisions over there at first base. So I just say, why not? You know, like what difference does it really make if you just have another bag on the inside? So
I'm a crotchety old man. I'm the old man in the balcony for the Muppet Show. I just don't change my game. Don't change it. I like it the way it is.
Going back to the last question, the comment is already, you know, passed on the YouTube chat, but you know, we were talking about the Arch Manning and the likes and all that
stuff
on Twitter. And somebody said, well, maybe Notre Dame fans are just smart enough to stay off Twitter.
Well,
I mean, it's a good retort, but I've been on Twitter enough to know that's not the case. There are a lot of Notre Dame fans on Twitter. So we know this for sure. We know this for sure. All right, fill in the blank. It's blank that since 2006, the cluster of states that includes Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, and Tennessee, basically the footprint, the predominant footprint of the SEC.
Of the SEC, yeah.
Yeah, has combined to win 24 college football and baseball national championships since 2006.
Crazy, I guess, is the word I would use. I would use, but then again, I'm not all that surprised. More baseball than football, as far as. But then again, I mean, the SEC is king in both. So, I don't like it, not even a little bit. But 24 in those two sports is pretty darned impressive, and it just tells you where the talent is. And those guys are staying home, and they're going to win a lot of football and a lot of baseball using those guys that are around those schools. If you're a northern school, you need to recruit, and you need to get those guys to leave the warmth and come up to the north and all of those different things, and that's not an easy task. Those guys want to stay home, and when they do, they win.
And, I mean, you're talking about 16 years and 24 championships for that footprint alone right there. You know, it's obviously Alabama's won a lot of them. Georgia just won one in football. Vanderbilt, you know, basically, you know, like you rip through the SEC and there have been, you know, you've got South Carolina, LSU, Vanderbilt has won two, you know, in college baseball that I'm talking about. Both Mississippi schools just did it. So it's like, you know, everyone from Mississippi who wasn't in Omaha last year was there this year.
Yeah, right.
Mississippi State won it last year and Ole Miss won it this year. And I mean, that's another story unto itself, is that coach, Mike Bianco at Ole Miss, he wanted Palminteri's job when Paul retired at LSU last year. He didn't get it. And so he stays at Ole Miss. They were the last team in the NCAA tournament this year, and they end up winning
crazy.
The whole thing. Yep.
Crazy. There was a stat that they lost in the first round of their conference tournament. I can't remember where they came in the SEC regular season, but I mean, neither one were good. And then they're the last team into the College World Series or into the playoffs. And then they end up winning the whole thing. That's impressive.
Yep. Back to that conversation we were talking about at first base, Salty Virginia Peanuts, pretty consistent contributor on this show. He said he's had to put a dislocated foot back on someone. That's a common injury for the base runner at first base. And you're right.
Ugh,
that's why it's just like,
that sounds awful. You're supposed to be on my side, Salty. Come on, man.
I think that's something you can avoid if you just go to that extra bag. So that's why I'm in favor of it. I'm surprised, you know, like, what would that kid you were talking about, what do you think he would say if you asked him? Would he say, come on, coach, give me the extra bag at first base?
The kid that broke his arm, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
He would probably be in favor of it. And I'll have to ask him, actually. He's busy with football workouts right now because he's an All-State offensive lineman. But, yeah.
That could have happened to that kid yesterday, the Ole Miss first baseman, because he basically had his forearm extended.
Yep.
And the runner just ran right into that forearm. You know,
it was the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. You could hear that thing snap throughout the whole stadium, man. That is something I will never forget. And we actually broke two bones in that game. That's first time ever. I coached a lot of football and I've never had two broken bones in one game. And as a baseball coach, I had that happen. So. Good
I'm for
me.
Avoiding broken bones. I'm for avoiding broken bones.
You think?
At any cost.
We're not deep enough for broken bones, Sean.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. Vince and I will be back tomorrow. We just plowed right through this.
Yes, we
did. Do you want a guest tomorrow? Should I find us a guest?
I mean, it's up to you. We can. We don't need one.
Okay. All right. I wanted to put it on you and see what you think.
I say we don't need one. That's what I say. You give me all day. See, with this show, what the best part about it is you give me all day to get all fired up and worked up about stuff.
That's
we
right.
We don't need a guest.
That's very true. Because, like, you know, we used to go on in my old show. We'd go on earlier, and it's like, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, come on, 6 o'clock needs to get here.
I'm telling you.
That's right. Good time, as always. And, of course, don't forget, like us on the YouTube page, subscribe on the YouTube page. You know, if you're kind of an aftermarket listener, I guess, you know, you're not watching live or watching the YouTube videos, of course, you can find us on all the different audio podcast platforms as well, whether it's Spotify or Apple, wherever you can like and subscribe and rate and do all that stuff. But late in the show, but oh, we got a thumbs up from D-Rock.
Hit those likes.
Irish. All right. Hit the likes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Much appreciated. Ladarius, great show, Irish Nation. You guys are just pumping each other right now, but that's all right too. A lot of community.
That's right.
In that
Love
chat.
The community.
Have a lot of fun in there. That's right. All right, Vince, I will talk to you mañana to all of our listeners and viewers. We will talk to you tomorrow as well. We'll have a lot more Notre Dame football conversation. I'm sure we'll have some more baseball stuff to talk about as well as we go through this with Link Jarrett down at Florida State now, the baseball team looking for a new coach. And again, as of right now, 68 days until Notre Dame, Ohio State. So
can't wait.
Looking forward to that. All right. We will talk to you tomorrow, IB Nation Sports Talk.